Well, you know, it's interesting as we wrap up 2024, we're kind of diving into some pretty heavy stuff. We're going to be taking a look at Requiem for the West. It was published just a few days ago in the Geopolitical Compass. And this piece, it really doesn't pull any punches.
Oh, no.
And it really digs into the West's actions in Gaza and Syria this year and what it says about the state of, well, the West itself. You know, it's interesting how the author uses the end of the year as kind of a framing device, like that image of the tolling bell. It's not just about the end of a year, it's about a sense of an ending on a much larger scale.
It's very much tapping into kind of this fin de siècle
Right.
vibe.
Apocalyptic kind of
Yeah,
almost like
absolutely.
saying the bell tolls for a civilization that has lost its soul.
You know, you can definitely hear echoes of Spengler and
Right.
Toynbee.
Yeah. Those are some pretty
Yeah,
strong words.
big ideas. Yeah.
The West is kind of painted as this colossus of steel and hollow promises, you know, prioritizing self-interest over compassion. Where do those hollow promises come from? You know, where do things start to go wrong? Like, how did we get here?
Well, that's a question that thinkers like, you know, Noam Chomsky and Edward Said have been grappling with for decades, right? I mean, they would argue that these actions in places like Gaza and Syria, they aren't isolated incidents. They're very much rooted in this longer history, this deep history of colonialism, imperialism, and this belief in the West's own superiority.
Okay, so it's not just about this year's events. It's about a much longer historical arc. But how does that connect to this idea of a lost soul? What does Raja see as evidence for this moral decay, you know?
Well, one of the things that Raja points to is the immense human cost of these actions, particularly in Gaza, which they call a land besieged, a people crucified. Over 10,000 deaths this year alone.
That's a truly
Staggering number.
staggering number,
And it's not just the numbers.
Well,
It's the way those deaths are framed,
yeah,
right? It's the language used to minimize the impact.
exactly, like that whole idea of collateral damage, right?
Right, Raja takes issue with terms like that,
Yes.
arguing that they dehumanize the victims. You
Absolutely.
create this distance between the West and the consequences of its actions.
Absolutely. It's a very sanitized, kind of almost bureaucratic language, right? To talk about these horrific things. And it's that detachment, I think, that ability to use language in that way, that for Raja is a symptom of a deeper sickness.
Then there's this, I thought, really provocative line, "Have the hunted now become the hunters?" Which it made me think about how power dynamics shift over time, you know, how those who were once oppressed can sometimes become the oppressors.
Is Raja suggesting that the West has adopted the tactics of its former enemies?
I mean, it's certainly open to interpretation, but I think it speaks to a larger point that Raja's making throughout the piece. That the West's actions often create the very conditions that then lead to instability and violence, which are then used to justify further intervention. It's a very self-perpetuating cycle, right?
Okay, so we've talked about Gaza, the devastating human cost, and this idea of the West as the hunter. But Raja doesn't stop there. They go on to describe Syria as a body broken, a nation dismembered,
Powerful image.
arguing that the West fueled the war there, not for humanitarian reasons, but for its own gain, dominance in oil.
And again, you see Raja connecting this back to this larger pattern of Western intervention in the Middle East, often with disastrous consequences. And they paint a very vivid picture of the devastation in Syria, you know, cities reduced to rubble, ancient history buried under the dust of war, a people scattered and displaced.
It's a powerful
It's that
document,
bit.
of the West's role in the region.
You know, it's hard to hear about this level of suffering and destruction, especially when you consider Raja's claim that the West isn't just some innocent bystander, but actively contributed to it. But even with all this, they do offer this glimmer of hope, which feels almost jarring after such a brutal assessment.
Well, I think it's a testament to the human spirit when you say, Even amidst the ruins, Raja finds these signs of resilience, mm-hmm. describing embers of hope still glowing in the eyes of the people who have endured these horrors.
It's like they're saying, look, the situation is dire, but the human will to survive, to hope, to resist, that's something that even the most powerful forces can't extinguish.
Precisely, yeah. And Raja connects this resilience to a call to action.
Urging us to become bearers of that glimmer, the keepers of that flame. But what does that look like in practice?
Right. It's easy to say we should be hopeful.
Yeah.
But how do we actually translate that hope into meaningful action? Especially when facing such deeply entrenched systems of power and injustice, you know?
Well, this is where the ideas of Chomsky and Said become particularly relevant, I think. Yeah. They both emphasize the importance of individual and collective action in challenging these oppressive structures.
Yeah.
Chomsky in particular stresses the power of grassroots movements, of ordinary people coming together to demand change.
So it's not about waiting for governments or institutions to act. It's about taking responsibility ourselves in our own communities and in our own lives.
Exactly. Yeah. And that action can take many forms. You know, speaking out against injustice, supporting organizations working for peace and human rights, educating ourselves and others about the root causes of these conflicts.
Raja also seems to be hinting at a need for a more fundamental shift in our values.
Yeah.
A move away from this self-interest and consumerism that they see as driving the West's destructive behavior.
That's a crucial point, I think. Yeah. Chomsky and Seb both argue that this moral decay is intimately linked to the West's economic and political systems,
mm-hmm.
systems that prioritize profit and power over people and the planet.
So if we want to see real change, it's not enough to just tweak the system around the edges. We need to fundamentally rethink our relationship to power, consumption, and each other.
And that's a daunting task.
Yeah.
But Raja's point is we can't afford to give in to despair. The stakes are too high.
It's a bit like that line from the poet Adrienne Rich.
Oh, yeah.
Our despair is another world they want.
Yeah.
You know, if we succumb to cynicism and hopelessness, we're playing into the hands of the very forces we're trying to resist.
I think that's a very powerful way to frame it. Yeah. Raja's calling for a kind of radical hope, a hope that refuses to be extinguished by the darkness, a hope that fuels action and inspires us to imagine a different future.
A future where the bell tolls not for civilization and decline, but for the birth of something new, something more just and sustainable.
Yeah.
But how do we get there?
That's the question, isn't it? And while Raja doesn't offer a blueprint, they do provide some clues, some starting points.
And I think those clues lie in the stories of resilience and resistance that they highlight throughout the piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those stories remind us that even in the face of overwhelming odds, people find ways to resist, to create, to love, to hope.
And those acts of resistance, however small they may seem, they are the seeds of a different future. They're the glimmers that, if nurtured and cultivated, can grow into a powerful force for change.
You know, we've been exploring some really heavy themes in this deep dive.
Yeah, it's a
Requiem for the West is a challenging piece, to say the least.
It is. It's a real call to, I think, wake up.
Yeah.
Can you say to recognize how interconnected our world is, you know,
yeah.
how our actions here have ripple effects across the globe. And, you know,
yeah.
Raja drawing on thinkers like Chomsky and Said
yeah. Seems to be urging us to kind of move beyond these simplistic narratives.
Yeah.
And to really try to see the world with clearer eyes, even when that clarity is painful.
It's like looking in a mirror and not recognizing, or maybe not wanting to recognize, the reflection staring back at us.
Yeah.
But what happens when we do look, you know?
Right.
When we acknowledge the darkness, the complicity, the ways in which we might be contributing to the problems that Raja outlines,
right?
Where do we go from there?
Well, that's where the real work begins.
Yeah.
And it's not easy work. It requires a willingness to, you know, challenge our own assumptions,
yeah.
to step outside of our comfort zones, to confront injustice wherever
yeah.
we find it.
To do that, we need hope. Right?
Yeah.
Raja talks about these embers of hope glowing in the eyes of those who have suffered the most.
Right.
The people of Gaza and Syria.
Yeah.
And that image has really stayed with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a reminder that even in the darkest of places, yeah. the human spirit can endure. It's really a testament to the power of resistance, both individual and collective.
Yeah.
Like Chomsky and Said have argued, you know.
Yeah.
Real change rarely comes from the top down. It comes from the bottom up.
Yeah.
From ordinary people organizing, speaking out, demanding a better world.
So it's about finding ways to connect with those movements,
yeah.
to amplify their voices,
yeah.
to support their work.
Absolutely.
It's about recognizing that we're not just passive observers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have agency, we have power, even if it feels small.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about recognizing that our actions, even the seemingly insignificant ones, have consequences.
Yeah.
The way we consume, the way we vote, the way we treat each other,
right.
It all matters.
Raja writes, "We who stand in solidarity with the oppressed, who refuse to be silent in the face of injustice, we are the bearers of that glimmer, the keepers of that flame."
Mm-hmm.
It's a call to action.
Yeah.
An invitation to join a movement that's bigger than ourselves.
It's a reminder that hope isn't passive.
Right.
It's active. It's defiant.
Yeah.
It's the fuel that drives us to keep fighting for a better world, even when the odds seem insurmountable.
This deep dive has been a journey, you know, a descent into darkness and a glimpse of the light that still flickers within it.
Mm-hmm.
As we close out 2024, I hope this conversation has sparked something in you, listener.
Yeah.
A question, a challenge, a sense of possibility.
Yeah, well said.
The future is unwritten, and it's up to each of us to decide what role we'll play in shaping it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.